Geological usually publishes on a weekly basis, but with the spread of the coronavirus into the United States and the current uncertainty around infection rates due to lack of testing, we're bringing you extra episodes that we hope you'll find helpful as we navigate ourselves through this challenging time. This is a short conversation with Craig Mitchell in which we discuss the current COVID-19 situation as it's unfolding here at the beginning of March in 2020. Not surprisingly, the Chinese medicine internet has been lit up with discussions about what kind of pathogen we're dealing with, herbs that are being used in China, and what plans practitioners are making here in the West, as it looks like it might be our turn to use the methods that have come down to us over the centuries in service of dealing with this modern epidemic. A big takeaway that I want to mention up front, because I think it's worth repeating, is that we're dealing with a highly contagious pathogen, and while we might be eager to do our part to help, it's vitally important to ensure that we're not inadvertently helping to spread the disease. A keen eye and an abundance of caution in keeping our clinics clean and disinfected is essential. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Geological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful, and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula, or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face. So subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Mayway.com. This season and every season, trust Mayway Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code Geological at the time of sign up for a one-month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool. A sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, Being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/Cheological to learn how. We all know that it's better to prevent disease than to have to cure it. If you're not up on the latest sanitation measures and guidelines, it's best to educate yourself and start now making sure that your clinic is safe for your patients, employees, and for yourself. Craig Mitchell, welcome to Cheological.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
We were talking earlier today about this COVID-19 situation. It's, of course, all over the news. It's all over the interwebs. Partly we were talking today because so many acupuncturists are receiving emails, all different kinds of notification. There's protocols. There's use this formula. There's go buy a boatload of you ping pong san. And I wanted to talk to you because I've been kind of scratching my head and going, wait a minute, are we doing Chinese medicine out here?
Maybe not. Yeah, I think we are in a unique situation. And it's one that I think we have to, as a community, think quite carefully about. We do, I think, need to look at patients that we're seeing as we always do, which is through the lens of the diagnostic systems of Chinese medicine. And that means using differential diagnosis. And that means that while any particular given protocol or suggestion that might be coming out of China or from anywhere else for that matter, that we need to think carefully about that from the perspective of the actual patient that we might be seeing at a given moment in time, just as we would with anything.
Of course. We both had a chance to experience SARS a bit. I was living there. You were actually coming through at various points and going to school. You were doing your PhD at that point. And I remember when SARS really first started to happen, the Bonlon gun was like gone from the pharmacies because people were making this assumption, oh, this is a viral thing. We're going to use this antiviral herb. And it was so surprising to me. Here I am, I'm studying in China. It's like, great, I'm going to get the real Chinese medicine. And yet people were using the Chinese herbs as if it was a Western medicinal. It was very confusing to me at that moment.
Yes, I agree. And frankly, I don't think that approach during that situation was particularly effective. I mean, it's one of those situations, Michael, as you know, right? What is that saying? Even a blind squirrel occasionally finds a nut. So was there someone that helped? Yeah, probably, right? Probably there was. But I think you and I have both been practicing Chinese medicine for a long time now. And I think, you know, for every patient who comes in and is complaining of a fever and a sore throat, for every patient that we've found that Yin Chao San was effective for that patient, there are a whole handful of patients where it turns out that we needed something quite different than that. Maybe we needed Ma Xing Shigan Tang. Maybe we needed, as you and I talked about earlier today, maybe there was a damp component in the patient's situation and we needed San Ren Tang, which is one of the formulas that I've heard some people talking about using for this COVID-19 outbreak. But the bottom line is, if you don't actually assess the patient and you don't see what's going on with them, none of these formulas are necessarily going to be helpful for anything.
Right. You know, I remember when I was in Chinese medicine school and, you know, of course, one of the first formulas you learn about is you ping fang san. It's like, oh, this is really helpful for, I'm using air quotes, your immune system.
Right.
And I've always had weak lungs and I thought, okay, cool. I'm going to start taking this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I took it for a couple of weeks and I woke up one night in the middle of the night freaking out because I thought my house was on fire. I was smelling like the smell of smoke. And it wasn't because my house was on fire. Actually, I was on fire. I'm already kind of a dry guy. Mm. And that stuff really dried me out. I for a number of days after that, it's like I smelled smoke everywhere I went. I finally realized, wait a minute, maybe this is not the right thing for me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was one of those moments where I began to realize there's stuff that we read in the books, there's things that we hear from our teachers, there's things that we say to each other And we go, yes, of course, that's true. And yet that really woke me up to, depends on the person, depends on their physiology, depends on where they're strong, where they're weak. I'm a dry guy. I used a formula that dried me out.
Right.
I literally set myself on fire.
Well, the best practitioners with whom I've had the opportunity to work, whether it's here or in Asia, they are people who are able to think flexibly about situations. And they are people who are, I think they go into the treatment room open to being surprised by what they are going to find. Mm-hmm. So they don't go in with some kind of a predisposition. They don't go in with some idea about, oh, you know, this patient has whatever the condition is you want to talk about. Oh, they have asthma, or they have irritable bowel syndrome, or they have COVID-19. And I already know what that's going to be based on the Western diagnostic assessment of that. That's not coming through the lens of Chinese medicine. If our experience is any example, our treatments will not be as effective if we use that strategy to make decisions about our patients.
Hello everyone, Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the 8 extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel, or the Sea of Yang, the primal reservoir of Yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of Yang Qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at annececilsturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
For me, one of the joys and one of the difficult things about Chinese medicine is to cultivate that sense of being able to walk into the treatment room a little bit empty, a little bit open to what's actually here.
Agreed.
And I mean, for me, I find that to be part of the joy of practice, but there's times I walk in and there's still that sense 20 years later of, oh my God, what do I do with this? And to somehow learn to get friendly with that.
Yes. Well, and I think also, Michael, I want to bring up one other point that you and I touched on when we initially spoke today. If we ask the question in a vacuum, if we say, well, is Chinese medicine able to effectively treat COVID-19? That is one question, and maybe that's an interesting question. I also think, however, that as a community, we also have to think a little bit about what we're doing and whether or not we're being responsible to our own community and to the other patients with whom we interact. We have talked about the fact that there is a huge amount of uncertainty out there still about the transmission of COVID-19, about the incubation phase of COVID-19, about the mortality rate associated with it, the severity of the presentations. And so I think that as a community, well, let me just say for a moment. So as you know, Michael, I am involved in running the Seattle Institute of East Asian Medicine. It just so happens that King County, where our school is located, is one of the first places in the United States to get a significant number of cases of COVID-19. And so we have kind of been, as a school and in our clinic, trying to determine what is the appropriate response to this. And while we are keeping our clinic open for the time being, we are actually asking both our students, staff, faculty, as well as our patients who have active respiratory symptoms, not to come in. So people, certainly if they have a fever, but even if they have an acute onset upper respiratory situation, we are asking them not to come in. And the rationale for that, and I know this may be, this may not be what some people in our community want to hear, but the rationale that we have applied is that it is difficult to know what the trajectory of this illness is going to be. And we don't have the ability, at least in our clinic, we don't have the ability to isolate people. Our clinic and our school are all mixed together. Everybody is literally, you know, in the same rooms, crossing in the hallway, using the same bathrooms. And what we do know about COVID-19 is that it's not only transmissible through respiratory droplets, but it appears to have a significant longevity even when it's on a surface. And so we feel that we have a responsibility to the other patients in our community to take some reasonable steps to ensure that we are not unintentionally exposing people to this illness in a way that would not be responsible. And whether or not at some point in the future, you know, we may end up being some of the frontline people who are trying to get a handle on this kind of a viral infection, given the fact that Western medicine doesn't have a lot of great tools for this. And while I understand and appreciate that, I also want to show what they call an abundance of caution with regards to how we're doing that right now.
Well, this kind of gets back to do no harm.
Exactly.
And this is a contagious pathogen. Clearly, it's a contagious pathogen. I mean, it's spread around the world very quickly, much quicker than SARS did.
Yes.
You know, the other piece is we didn't have the same social networking, cell phones, deep interconnectedness back in the early part of the century that we do now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's hard to know how much of it is this is a virulent pathogen, how much of it is, well, our social fabric is really different now than it was 15, 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
You know, that's a whole other question. I don't know if it's part of what we need to get into today, but it does point to the deep uncertainty that we have. And so doing anything that we can to make sure that we're not spreading this
right
would be really, really helpful. I understand we all want to help. I was talking with my buddy Toby Daly the other day. We were talking about acupuncture and, you know, how we might help. And we're both talking about herbs as well. And we're both thinking, you know, we could do some kind of remote thing where you're talking to people, prescribe them some herbs, drop them in a place. You guys never touch each other. It might not be a bad idea. I mean, just because we don't want to infect other people, we don't want ourselves infected. I mean, we're not going to be much good if we're sick.
Well, and one of the difficulties with this, and frankly, it's one of the things that's given us great pause about even keeping our clinic open at this point, is that people can be infectious before they're symptomatic. They don't even know yet. And so, you know, we have gone through, I have to give a little shout out to the academic dean in our program, Kathy Taramina, who spearheaded this major effort over the last week. We have disinfected the entire school. We wiped down every surface. We got rid of a huge amount of pillows and towels and things that we couldn't clean properly. And we've just made it as clean a site as we can possibly make. And we're still uneasy about staying open and having patients come through who we don't know what their infectious state is. And so I do think that being, I don't know, maybe I'm getting old, Michael, but I feel like a little bit of a conservative approach here seems appropriate under these circumstances.
I think abundant caution is not a bad stance to take.
Yeah.
Where are you taking your leads from? Are you going with CDC guidelines? Are you getting something from King County? Where do you get your leads for deciding, do we stay open? Do we stay closed? What kind of precautions do we take? Are you doing any kind of record keeping? What are you doing there?
That's a great question. So we have been monitoring CDC communications for sure. We have a fantastic public health department here in King County, and they have, I mean, there is a state of emergency in Washington State declared by the governor. So there's a lot of resources coming out, both written resources, but also in the last couple of days, the University of Washington has just gotten fully set up to be able to do testing for COVID-19. And so I think we're all expecting to see a significant increase in the number of tested patients, which I think will be potentially very helpful in terms of understanding the spread. We often do things based on the decision-making process that the Seattle Public Schools use. And right now, King County Public Health is encouraging schools to stay open. They're encouraging schools to take these kinds of precautions in terms of anybody with respiratory symptoms not come in, people minimizing unnecessary physical contact, limiting the number of large group settings, and being super careful about hand washing and hand hygiene generally. And so we're looking to these organizations to help us in our decision-making process. We have instituted something which we haven't used before, which is basically we keep a log at our front desk of everybody who comes into our facility. And we have a conversation with them about travel and about any respiratory symptoms that they've had. And that's partially to potentially screen somebody who's not thinking about what some potential exposure might be that they've had. And it's also to make sure that if we were to be in a situation where there was an exposure on campus, that we would be able to contact people who we think, you know, might have been exposed to that person.
You could catch the various vectors if they happen to show up.
Exactly.
That seems really prudent, especially if you're a school or a large operation of some sort.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like public health 101 in a way, now that you mention it.
Yeah. I mean, the other question I thought you were, when you were asking me, where are we looking for input about this? My initial thought was, what classical texts are we looking at?
In recent years, the Siam acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Siam approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a four-needle treatment to address the five element and six qi imbalances in the body. The four needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did. I wanted to get to that as well, because, you know, there's some stuff coming out of China that we can read and think about. I mean, I've seen some of this stuff that's been emailed, and, you know, one way of looking at it is, oh, here's the herbs I should use. But I look at it and I go, well, what are they seeing? What are they thinking? Right? Use it as kind of a case study, like a thought experiment to kind of sharpen up the saw, so to speak, for thinking about differential diagnosis. So those can be useful, but yeah, what about some of the more classical materials?
Well, I think from what I understand, I mean, one of my teachers here in Seattle, who is Chinese and who has a lot of friends and family who are in China, he's been in practice the better part of, I guess, 50 years or a little bit more. And his take on this, you know, this is only one person, but it's based on his extensive experience and information that he's getting from China, is that probably a warm disease strategy, something from the Wenbing tradition, might end up being the most effective thing, in part because it seems as though many of these kinds of conditions have a damp heat type component to them, or damp warmth in the kind of parlance of warm disease theory. And so those kinds of conditions arguably might be more effectively treated with formulas from the Wenbing tradition, like San Ren Tang I mentioned earlier, or Huopo Xialing Tang, or one of those, which are those are in that damp warmth kind of framework. I have heard about people using other things, some things from the Shanghan Lun as well. I imagine that that's quite possible, that those formulas could also be effective. But again, you know, as you and I keep talking about when we discuss this, it's all, those are all possible. They're all fair game. And until you're actually sitting down with a patient and doing a careful analysis of their signs and symptoms, how old are they? What was their state of health before they got sick? Where were they exposed? What's their living environment? What are their current signs and symptoms? And then doing the differential diagnosis, that's such an amazing strength of Chinese medicine. In a way, Michael, I think to me, this really points out that the real value of our medicine, aside from its efficacy in treating complex diseases, lies in differential diagnosis. And so if you're giving up your differential diagnosis and just choosing a formula because someone from China said that you should use that, that seems really unfortunate, and like you're not serving your patients as well as you could under other circumstances.
You mentioned San Ren Tang. And this is kind of you don't hear about San Ren Tang that often, at least I don't. And I know that I had a conversation with Qin Zhao a little while back, and he's been using the other formula that you mentioned, the name just
Huopo Xialing Tang.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. He's quite keen on that, because as he's been seeing this, at least in Wuhan, where it's cold and it's damp and there's toxin, you need that like super aromatic stuff to disperse.
Exactly.
So, and of course, if this illness shows up in a place like Arizona, that might look different, right? Or Southern California. Again, we need to see how does this manifest in a certain person in a certain place. That being said, could you talk to us a little bit about San Ren Tang for those who may not be familiar with it?
I think that San Ren Tang and Huopo Xialing Tang are formulas that one of the things that's interesting about them is that they can both be used for externally contracted illnesses, but they can also be used for damp heat type conditions that are internal as well. And so the difference between the two formulas, and everybody can look them up in the formulary, has to do with the relative proportion of dampness to heat in the different patterns, right? So that's one of the key differentials between those two formulas. But essentially what you have in a formula like San Ren Tang is you're using substances that are, as you mentioned, that are aromatic, that are opening, that clear away dampness, and that are both opening the upper burner, the lungs, making sure that the lung qi is flowing smoothly, using something that's aromatic and dampness dispelling for the middle burner to make sure that the transformation of dampness is happening properly in the middle burner, and then also using substances that have a diuretic quality that are helping to clear dampness through the urinary system as well. So, you know, San Ren Tang is one of these interesting formulas that it works really by stimulating the metabolic pathways in the body that transform fluids. And that means lung, spleen, kidney, urinary bladder in this case. And so I think one of the things that sometimes makes that formula hard to understand is that it's not a particularly strong heat clearing formula, but nonetheless, it is able to treat conditions of damp heat or damp warmth by stimulating the normal movement of fluids and having the heat exit the body through the urinary system.
And it sounds like because it is so strongly dealing with the fluids, it's like the heat goes out with the fluids. It's got nothing to hold on to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is not a formula that I know very well. I appreciate your explanation of it. The main thing I remember about San Ren Tang is an article that I read by Dan Bensky like many, many years ago. And he talked about this very thing. In fact, he really enjoyed using it for a number of different things. I'm going to have to go dig that article out and like go bone up on it since we're having this conversation. But the main thing that I remember is the way that it did work the fluid metabolism through the three different burners.
Yes.
And that's always been the thing in the back of my mind about that. But honestly, I have not really used that formula much in my practice, hardly ever. And I hope that I do not have an opportunity to do so. But I'm going to go bone up on this one because it might be really helpful in this situation, given circumstances.
I also hope, though, that you don't need to wait for an externally contracted illness to use it. That's one of the powerful things about, you know, the formulas from the Shanghan Lun and from the warm disease tradition. Many of these formulas that were originally used and can still be used for externally contracted illnesses oftentimes also are very effective for things that are internally generated. Mm-hmm. And so Sanren Tang can be quite useful even if you're not thinking about using it for COVID-19.
Of course.
Or some other externally contracted illness.
Right. If we see a situation where someone's got dampness in all three burners there, and maybe especially if they're in a damp environment, that could be really helpful for their, air quotes here, arthritis or digestive issues. I mean, this is one of the beauties, of course, of Chinese medicine. One of the reasons I love it to pieces, and it drives me crazy at the same time, is that, you know, this one formula, you can use it in these varied ways, but it really takes that understanding of what are we looking at and what's the dynamic that's involved.
Right. And again, right, it goes back to, are you doing good differential diagnosis?
Which is hard.
It is hard.
And I found for myself, I have to be willing to be wrong a lot, you know, to really take a stance. This is what I see. This is what I'm going to treat, and be willing to deal with it if it doesn't go the right way, and hopefully learn something from it.
And, you know, one thing, Michael, I think, since we're talking about formulas and, you know, you mentioned to me earlier that you saw something about maybe a suggestion of using Yin Chao San for this situation, or having people stock up on that or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm certainly not a warm disease scholar, but in this pattern from, you know, I listened to some of the work that Jin Zhao has done, and I, in conversations with Ma Shouchun, who's a doctor here in Seattle, this idea of there being a damp component in these patterns seems to be fairly consistent. And if that is in fact the case, then I think the use of Yin Chao San could potentially be quite problematic, actually. So I don't want to say it's good or it's bad. What I want to say is the idea that you would use it reflexively without actually looking at a patient's tongue, without actually hearing about their symptoms, without actually doing the differential diagnosis that we do, that's not a good idea. And it doesn't matter whether a formula is Yin Chao San or San Ren Tang or anything else, it's just not a good idea.
I think that's a really helpful point. It's so easy to like read something and go, oh, this person used it and it was helpful. That means I can. It means maybe I can. You understand the dynamic, you understand the mechanism. Well, good luck to you out there. Maybe we'll come back at some point if we need to for updates as things evolve here. I've got a feeling it's our turn at bat. You know, throughout history, Chinese doctors have had to confront these sorts of epidemic situations or pandemic, perhaps, situations. It's fun reading the history and thinking about it, but man, I'm telling you, I feel like I'm up here at home plate now and my knees are a little bit wobbly.
Yeah, I hear you, Michael. And I hope that, frankly, I hope it doesn't come to that, because if we really end up on the front lines, it'll mean that there's been a complete breakdown of the mainstream medical system. And I can't see how that would be good for any of us, frankly.
Agreed. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate you doing this and trying to get some information out into the community, and look forward to talking to you the next time.
Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.